Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The First Deal Experience. This conversation was with my friend Sabine Rolnick, whose husband was actually on the podcast a few months ago. She had a great conversation with me about psychology, entrepreneurship, and self-limiting beliefs. Enjoy the episode.
Where did you teach?
UIC.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Right on. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what did you teach?
Psychology.
So did you do the psychology teaching thing first, or did you do the real estate first? Which one?
Oh, no. I was going to be that 80-year-old professor in the department. This was not a plan.
Yeah.
Since I was little, I was always very kind of like, this is what I want to do. I was going to be a doctor.
Wow.
And then it was in college that I got very ill and realized I hated being in hospitals. And I'm like, I don't want to be in hospitals anymore. And I decided I didn't want to be a doctor, but luckily I was already a psychology major.
Yeah.
So I realized that I loved college. I could be in college forever. And decided to pursue getting my PhD in psychology and being an academic.
Wow.
So I had really three career goals in my life. First was to be a doctor, then to be a professor, and then changing to go into real estate.
Yeah. What was the pull there then to wanting to do real estate?
Well, it's kind of funny, because it seems to always be medically related for me to make a big life change.
Yeah.
When I'm really excited about something, I can really very much lock into it. And it takes a lot to make me change direction. So I started suffering from severe chronic daily migraines in 2012. And it was so severe, I had to take a medical leave of absence. I tried to push through for about 6 weeks.
Wow.
And it just was not functional. And I had them for 2 years, every day, a migraine. And at the end of that period, I had to make a decision if I was going back to the university or not. And I had to just let go and just focus on my healing. And because, you know, I felt like I was letting my department down. Because, you know, when you're tenure track, you are taking a spot. It's not an easy to replace spot. And so my spot was being held for me. So they periodically would check in. Of course, check in as a, hey, Sabine, how are you doing? Are you okay? But also, hey, Sabine.
When can we expect you? Yeah.
Exactly. And I just realized that that was stressful for me. And so I had to let go and resign. And it was actually the best thing I could have done. I actually had 3 days without a migraine after I let go. Handed in my resignation letter. Then it came right back.
Sure, sure.
But so then I had another year with every other day a migraine. And then finally I did Botox for migraines and gave me my life back. And at that point I had to make a decision. Did I want to go back to academia or did I want to do something else? And when we made the decision to resign, and I say we because Matthew and I are partnership, and because he knew that was a really hard decision for me, because I was actually going up for tenure that year, and so I had to make that choice: either I was going to go up for tenure, or resign. And I just didn't want to put myself through that, as I was starting to feel like there was some progress being made. And I decided once I was better, I said, you know what? I have done the academia thing. And we had started that year when I made the decision. Sorry, but let me remember.
Sure.
But when I made the decision, I had to have a backup plan because I didn't know how to let go of my career as an academic without knowing where I was going.
Yeah.
My mom raised me to always being very career-minded and to not ever not have some sort of career. She was a pediatrician. And so Matthew and I together came up with the idea of rehabbing houses. And so once I let go, I said, okay, I can do that because if I'm having a particularly bad day, it's pretty easy to cancel and reschedule. Can't do that with a lecture. Can't be, you know, in fact, the first day that I had to cancel with the migraine so bad, I had to say, please have someone step in and teach my 3-hour course.
Yeah, yeah.
And luckily there was somebody that could do that, but you know, you can't do that all the time. I mean, they had to make those arrangements for the rest of that semester. But as a rehabber, if I needed to reschedule, I could do that. And I didn't have to be someplace every single day, all day long. And so we talked about real estate on our very first date.
Oh, is that right? Oh, no kidding.
We did.
How did you guys meet?
eHarmony.
Oh, that's good for you guys.
eHarmony.
Yeah.
It was, I'm a psychologist.
Yeah.
eHarmony was founded by a psychologist. He based it on relationship research and compatibility research, which is what made me interested in trying it.
Mm.
Because at first I was like, I'm not doing this whole internet thing.
Yeah. And this is years ago.
This is years ago.
Before Tinder, before Hinge, before Coffee Meets Bagel.
I never heard of Coffee Meets
There's
Bagel.
A lot of them. I've never used them.
I've been off the market for a long time.
Yeah.
We just celebrated 18 years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Matt told me that. Yeah.
So this is 2004 that I went on eHarmony. And this is the year that I was transitioning. I was a professor first in California at UC Riverside.
Mm.
And I left Riverside to come to UIC and University of Illinois at Chicago. And so when I went to our annual conference, the American Psychological Conference. It was in Hawaii. Great transition.
Wow. How convenient.
So convenient. Yeah. And there, it's amazing. Huge turnout. Everybody wanted to go to the conference in Hawaii.
Yeah, the one in Cleveland. No one showed up, right? The one in Hawaii. Oh my God.
And they were smart. They made all the sessions like 9 to 2 because they knew everybody was going to be gone in the afternoons anyway. But one of my grad students' father was also a psychologist and worked with the founder of eHarmony.
Oh, that's incredible.
So when I was talking to her, she introduced me to her dad, and he's like, you know, you should get on eHarmony. And I said, oh, no, I'm not doing those internet things. And he told me his background and that he based it entirely on solid psychological research. So that made me go, okay, let me do this.
Yeah.
And I have to say, it made me feel more comfortable moving to a whole new city. As an academic, you can be very isolated.
Oh, sure.
Very locked in your room, in your research lab, and not out and about meeting tons of people. And it always seems to be like in California, I was the only single person or one of two single people in the department. And at UIC, it was, again, I think, I don't remember how many, if there were other single people. So it was a nice way to start to meet people. And I have to say, in all the years of dating, I had never met anybody as compatible with me as Matthew.
Wow.
And he felt the same way. We knew right away.
Yeah.
We knew right away. So
first date, you guys knew.
Well, we both knew. Matthew acted on it, canceled his subscription. He's like, I'm done. It took me 4 dates, but those 4 dates were in 1 week.
I was going to say, yeah, that's actually a lot faster. Listen, with my wife, I knew within a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
With her, it took her a few months.
Okay.
Right. But
we're usually a little more cautious.
Yeah, which is smart. We need people to be cautious.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious, and I think this is a great place to start. But mm-hmm. you know, for you as a you know, somebody in academia for years before you got into real estate,
mm-hmm.
somebody who was in the classroom, and now you know you're in construction sites, mm-hmm. rehab zones. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that transition. And walk with me on the mental side first. Like, what were some of the self-limiting beliefs that you were like, oh, I can't do this. Like, I'm a professor. I'm a psychology. I don't know how to rehab houses. Walk me through that.
Wow. Okay. It was scary.
Yeah.
It was definitely scary. And I thought, you know, I'm so used to people coming to me first, right? Because as the professor, I'm in for the classroom. Students come to me. I don't have to go out to people. I didn't have to sell myself and what I could do. I've never thought of myself as a salesperson. I had one sales job at 18 and I hated it. I'm not a salesperson. I'm not a salesperson. I hate sales. I don't want to be salesy. I can't do that. I had to reframe it because, you know, we were part of the We Buy Ugly Houses franchise. Mm. We bought HomeVest.
Mm-hmm.
I like structure. I didn't want to just do this out with no guidance, no structure. They have a training program. I love training. I'm an academic.
Yeah.
So But I realized that if I came in with the, if I reframed my thinking, because not sales, I'm here to solve a problem. I'm here to help this family get out of whatever situation they're in, whether it was the loss of loved ones, the parents, and now they have a house they don't need, they don't want, and they realize it's a mess and they can't sell it the regular way. I'm helping them. Or if it's an older couple who wants to move on but doesn't want to deal with a million people traipsing through their home, getting the home show ready.
Yeah.
You know, that this would help them. And I can also buy it as is, where is, and get rid of their stuff that nobody wants anymore, that their kids don't want, because we're dealing with that a lot, right? Kids today, they don't want their parents' china. They don't want their parents' furniture. So
or their architecture or design.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. They're like, oh, we don't need that. And so it'd be easy for them to just leave their stuff behind that they didn't need to take to their next stays, you know, wherever their next part of life is going to be, whether going closer to their family member who's, you know, kids today, they move across the country. And I say kids, I mean, these are adult kids.
Yeah. My generation.
Your generation. Yeah. They could be anywhere. Just like, you know, my mom was, I grew up in New York and I moved first to California, then to Chicago. And then my mom moved out to be in Chicago with me once I met Matthew.
Yeah.
And she knew we were, you know, going to get married. So they can just leave behind all the stuff that they're not bringing. And that brought peace of mind. I mean, those were the most common situations. Usually, I had one case where this gentleman had never lived anywhere other than this home. He was probably 60 or 70. His mother was obviously older, and she had dementia, and she was physically disabled, and he couldn't care for her in their home anymore. And he couldn't afford to put her in a nice place. So the only way he could afford to do that was to sell the house. And he didn't want to deal with going on
the stock market. Yeah.
So I came in and I bought the house from him. And then he could put his mom in a really nice place in her own room, things like that. And he actually just wanted to move into an apartment. It was all about his mom.
Mm.
And so it made me feel so good to help him help her.
Yeah.
And take better care of her, because he really could. I think she broke her leg one day the house because he couldn't help her enough.
Mm.
Again, he was getting older himself. So when I reframed it, that I'm here to solve problems, I'm here to help others, it made it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Because then I could walk in and talk to them. And I wasn't the rehabber that came in and be like, okay, this is the number. I'm the rehabber that came in and talked to me.
Yeah.
Tell me what's going on. Why are you selling? What's next? Where are you going? How can I help? What do you need?
Mm-hmm.
And then if I could help them, great. If I told them, there were some that I said, your home is really nice. You don't need me. You can put this on the market and get much more money. This is what I think you could sell it for instead. But this is all I can offer you, because I have to build in a profit. I have to build in some updates that I would need to do.
Which, by the way, they might love that offer still, because it's like, hey, like, it's less than what I can get on the market, but at least it's guaranteed.
Exactly.
At least I know you're going to come through.
Exactly.
Like, and you know what you're talking about.
And it's easier. It's easier. And sometimes that's all people want is what's going to be easier and no stress.
Yeah.
So, because there's definitely a couple that I bought that I'm like, you
talk about. Yeah. I want to touch on that for a little bit, because I think a lot of people that I've at least worked with, they're like, yeah, I'm really hesitant on starting a business, or I'm hesitant on getting into real estate. It's usually because for them, it's like, well, I'm not a salesperson. I'm not charismatic. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And as I've done a lot of this over the years, it's like, being good with people actually doesn't mean you know the right things to say. It means when the right time to listen.
Yes.
Like, that's, in my opinion, what it means to be good with people, is how good are you at actually listening to people, more so than quote unquote saying the right thing so you can earn that sale.
Exactly.
And so I love that story. Was that your very first transaction, or was that like number three or four?
Oh, with the man and his mother?
Yeah.
That was very early. It wasn't number one.
Okay.
But it was definitely the first year Matthew and I did it together. And then the second year after the first year, he went back. So this was, I think, the first one I did solo.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think that was the first one I did solo. And when I say solo, it wasn't 100% solo because we had a mentor as part of the Home Investors. And because I was so nervous about going without Matthew, because he would always come with me. Again, I told you, this was, Matthew's done sales his whole life.
Yeah.
This is, this not, you know, very new for me. So now doing it solo, but not 100% solo, I brought Alan. And so that he could be there just in case I panicked or something this. And I'll be honest, when I told him the number, and he's like, okay. I wanted to be like, are you sure? Like, are you really comfortable with this?
Yeah.
And I mean, again, it was a very fair offer. It was, I mean, but I was so, again, limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
I was sure he was going to say, you've got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. I remember one of the early ones we went to, they were like, get out, get out. I can't believe I've wasted time talking to you. But they were completely unrealistic in what they thought their home would sell for, even on the market, let alone what a rehabber would buy it.
Isn't it funny, too, how like they're either super unrealistic about their number, mm-hmm. and it's way too high, mm-hmm. or it's like, are you sure it's worth that much? And it's just like they undershoot themselves. Uh-huh, uh-huh. No one's ever like, hey, let's look at the data, you know, and like the numbers.
No one thinks about it. See, and I'm a data junkie.
Yeah.
And again, I was an academic. I was a researcher. That is what I did for a living. That is, so that comes through in every aspect of my business.
Yeah.
So that was my first solo one without Matthew. And I was so happy that it went the way it did, because on the phone, this gentleman sounded very gruff. Mm. And I think that's part of why I wanted Alan to come with me.
Yeah.
He just sounded
gruff as in very erratic, assertive. What are we? Yeah.
Very short.
Oh, very, okay. So I mean, on edge.
The voice sounded very edgy, very harsh kind of voice.
Got it.
And so it made me very nervous. Like, oh, he's going to be, oh, when I tell
tear
him.
Tear me apart. Know, yeah, exactly. For sure. Yeah.
I was so sure.
Get in the earful. Yeah.
And he was so nice in person. And I mean, it taught me a good lesson. Don't judge people on the phone. Because first of all, as a psychologist, I already know, you don't know if someone walks by you on the street that you know, and they don't say anything to you, they don't look at you, and you're like, oh, wow, they don't like me anymore. We're not friends. What happened? Might not have nothing to do. They might not have seen you at all. We call it the fundamental attribution error. We attribute it to something about us. And so, you know, I attributed to that his gruffness on the phone to that he doesn't really want to work with me. He doesn't really want, but he's just, you know, calling me because he feels like he, you know, he has to explore this. But he was so nice and so appreciative that it totally made me start to rethink, like, I can't go in being scared. I have to always go in knowing I'm there to be helpful. And if I can help, then I will.
Yeah. I think it's that survival mentality, right, that people have. I forget what part of the brain is activated when someone is kind of like, I don't know you, but I'm in survival mode.
Yes. What? The reptilian.
That's right. The reptilian brain. Yeah, I remember reading a book about that where there's three layers, right, whatnot. Mm-hmm. So for you, and this is actually a really fun question for me to ask. So for you as a psychologist and as like a real estate investor, entrepreneur, in your experience, what is the best way to kind of get people out of that reptilian brain? Because I don't think that's just helpful in business. I think that's helpful in life, especially when we're in a society now where ideology seems to clash so often.
Ask questions and ask with an open mind. Ask with care and not, you know, because sometimes people ask you the question in a way that you know.
Yeah.
They know.
It's a combative
answer.
Question.
It's combative.
There's an agenda.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're looking for a fight, or they're looking to do a gotcha. They're looking to catch you or to bring you down. And that's not going to help. That doesn't. We already know. That does not help. It does not help in our society. And I think in sales or in any field where you're working with other people, which is almost everything.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it's your doctor or, I mean, I know when I go to the doctor's office, the doctor that asks me sincere questions, including how are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, how's your daughter? How's work? because I'm a human being. I'm not just a body that has right. an elbow that hurts or something like that.
Right.
That's when you're going to get a better relationship and, you know, more honest answers and guards down.
Yeah.
But when you come in like, okay, I mean, that's why I gave you the example of, you know, the rehabber that comes in, just looks at the house. Okay, you know, you're not going to get that good reaction. So then when you come in, whether it's as a realtor, as a rehabber, or any field that, again, you interact with people, if you can just come in and learn what people need, and even as the person who is the one in need, you know, because sometimes people are impatient and they just want to know what's it going to be. And you've got to work with that too. And you have to, you know, kind of find a way to, I don't want to say soften, but still try to build that rapport. And it mm-hmm. might not be in that first second. And you might have to step up your rapport in the beginning really quickly, faster than the way I normally would, because you want to react to how they are feeling. You don't want to, You don't want to dismiss them.
Yeah.
Because some people are just cut to the chase. Let's move.
Mm-hmm.
And usually then you want to try to do as much as you can in that way, but still ask questions. Because who do people like talking about the most?
Mm-hmm.
Themselves, right?
Yeah.
So if you ask them questions about, you know, again, why are you selling? But not in an accusatory way.
Yeah.
So I usually like to say more like, so what's next? Where are you going?
Yeah.
What are you looking for? Oh, and they're like, well, tired of these Chicago winters. I had that. I've had that a couple of times.
I was going to say,
tired of these Chicago winters. I'm like, oh, where are you going? Somewhere down south, California? And they're like, yes, you know, actually we were on vacation in Tennessee and it's so beautiful.
Mm.
And taxes are so low. I'm like, I know. Mm. You know, so that disarms people.
Yeah.
Because now you're not just looking for something from them. You're trying to understand what they want. And then, so then my next question is, are you trying to get there before winter comes? Is that the goal?
Yeah.
Before you have to shovel that first, you know, right. sidewalk or walkway. And they're like, yes, mm. I can't deal with that anymore.
Yeah.
So that's what I say, is ask questions in a way that you're actually trying to get to know them.
Yeah. So transitioning from that, right, like those type of conversations, to then talking numbers,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I think like a lot of people have that style of, okay, like now onto business,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
What is a way for you, as you've had these conversations, to carry that type of rapport, but I would also say levels of curiosity,
mm-hmm.
levels of care, right? How do you carry that culture of that conversation forward mm-hmm. to when they're kind of going, so what's your offer?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you want for it? And mm-hmm. here's the research and the data, right? Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people tend to compartmentalize those two different conversations
mm-hmm.
within the same time frame. So how do we merge the two together?
Oh, I mean, I think it's still difficult for most people.
Yeah.
And it's still a little scary for me. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's still always that awkward thing. And whether as a rehabber or even as a realtor, when you're having to talk about making that commission conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Which
is a big thing now. We've all talked about, you know, with the NAR settlement. But it's usually, it's like, okay, after we've gone through the house, and then I say, okay, looking at this, you know, sometimes I'll say, well, you know, was there a number you had in mind?
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to also know, are we this far apart? Are we going to be this far apart? Are we going to be, you know, really in par? Sometimes we're like, I don't have a number in mind. I'm like, okay, good. Just curious. And then I'll say, well, you know, these are the things I'm going to have to do. I usually start with that.
Mm-hmm.
I know you love this kitchen, but if I'm buying this house to sell it, I'm going to have to redo this so that I appeal to 90% of the buyers
yeah.
out there. That's how I have to look at this. Even though I know you've loved this kitchen, it's worked for you for
a lot of great
years.
Memories. You know,
exactly.
Yeah.
This is not what today's buyer is looking for. And so that if you were to sell it on your own, you know, you would have to sell it given this style of kitchen, yeah. which is not what people are looking for. And I'd have to do the bathrooms because while it's really cool and that's the bathroom I had growing up, that's not what, you know, and I try yeah. to do that kind of thing, relate to what I experienced, my own, you know, I grew up in the 70s, so in the 80s. And so if homes are still in that condition, I go, oh my goodness, that looks just like my bathroom
yeah.
growing up, you know, and I love that bathroom. But that's not, and then I talk about, but that's not what today's buyer is looking for. And then I say, so I'll have to do this. I'll have to do this. I'll have to do this. And I said, and of course, this is a business for me. I have to pay my mortgage as well. And I have to, you know, pay for my daughter. And so, of course, you know, I have to factor in not only the cost, but for me to make some money.
Yeah.
So when I do all this, okay, this is the number that I can offer.
Yeah.
So I try to frame it in not just a hard number, but this is where I come from. This is because I have to factor in the cost to do this. And then, of course, I do have to make money. I have to, you know, I have bills to pay too.
Right.
And that usually makes it more tolerable for people because it's not just like I'm coming in hardball, like, here's my number. End of story. I'm a real person too.
Yeah. So final question for you. So for the individual that's, you know, in their full-time career, they want to do what you do on the side or maybe even do it full-time. What would be the piece of advice that you would give to that individual? Almost the equivalent of like, if you had to talk to yourself when you first began this journey and go, all right, like I have a time machine. I can only tell myself one thing when I first got started. Like, what would be the one thing, not just to succeed, but also to prevent a lot of the mistakes that you made?
Wow. So, I am a firm believer in getting help. I am not one of those people who thinks I can do everything on my own. That's not realistic.
And even if you were, it wouldn't be true.
It wouldn't be true. For because sure. We can't do everything on our own. And so, I have to tie it all kind of a little together in the sense of, like I gave you the example for the Homefesters, we did a training program. I mean, we didn't just decide. I know a lot of people do this on their own without any training, and they go out there and they're like, "Why is this not working?" Or they're stumbling through, and they don't have any help. We were fortunate to literally have a training program. If you don't want to buy into a franchise and have a training program, to find people who do what you want to do and ask them for help, ask them for guidance. And I say the same thing to people who want to become a realtor, right? Yeah. Because I'm both, you know, the rehabber and the realtor. I started off when I got my license, we'd already been doing the real estate. We'd already been rehabbing. We were going through Matthew's license, but I loved it so much. I said, you know what? I want to have my license too. So I was able to do it with, I mean, already having years of experience.
Yeah.
But when I meet new people who think they might want to get it, I say, make sure you join a fabulous company that has a lot of training. And if you even better, join a team. Mm. Because that way you have supports built around you so that you have someone to ask. Because without having people, whether we want to call them trainers or mentors, colleagues that you look up to, it's just very lonely and very frustrating because you know, obviously not every time you meet with someone is going to be a win. It's the majority of the time it's not because there are choices, right?
Yeah.
And you might not be the best fit. But if you have the people to talk to about it, one, to get guidance, suggestions, and again, to break through that mindset, the limiting beliefs that we all can have to say, oh, you know, they're all going to be angry at me. Well, no, they're not going to. It's so important to then, I think, surround yourself but with at least a few people that can guide you and be a resource.
Yeah.
And then that way in the future, you can give back to other people.
That's right. That's right.
So that would be.
Love it.
That would be what I would suggest.
Well, thanks for spending the time with us today and sharing your story.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.